Thanks, Jeff. Hello. How are you doing? Hey, it's very good to be here. It's a little bit of a surprise, too. I had to wait 8 hours in the airport yesterday and got in around 2:30 this morning, so I'm a little bit tired. So I'm hoping not to fall asleep during the message, but if I do, please give me a nudge and I'll wake up. It's good to be here. And I don't know if a picture will come up or not at all, but there's a picture of my wife, Cavell, and my three boys. And I'm originally from Vancouver. There we are. My wife is from Newfoundland. We are in Calgary right now. And we have served in Asia for about 20 years. Now, like I said, we relocated to Calgary in mid-pandemic. And after being in Asia for 20 years, we're encountering winter. And this past week, it's been like minus 16 every night. So, I mean, this is October. It's okay for January, but certainly October, it's a bit cold. We had 2 days of snow. And it looks very, very wintry in Calgary right now. And I know that you've had some really great weather here. So we're getting winter early. And yesterday, I found myself putting in some tulip bulbs in some planters. And I thought, as I was doing that, sticking them in the dirt and then putting them away underneath in the garage for the winter, I thought this is similar to what we're doing here now. You put these bulbs, and I know that I have Dutch heritage, and I know there's a big tulip festival here, but I know that you're probably quite familiar with the whole process of just planting, waiting for a harvest, or waiting for a blossom, or waiting for that time when spring comes, and that which you've kind of invested into some time ago will bear some form of fruit now or down the road. And that's kind of what we're doing here in terms of this missions convention. We're investing into something, we're planting something, and we're putting it away. We don't immediately see the outcome of it, but we are expecting, for good reason, that in due season, there will be a blossom. There will be some type of fruit. There will be something to look at. And that's a little bit of what we're doing here. We're investing into something that perhaps you don't fully see the consequence of it. You don't fully see what the outcome will be. You, in a sense, put that money away or put that energy or put whatever it is that you're investing into. You kind of put it away and forget about it. But there is fruit. There's consequence and there's result. And that's a little bit of what I'm going to share about this morning. So this is my plan. I'm going to share a little bit about Asia and what God is doing there. I'm going to share a little bit about the needs there. I'm going to share a little bit about our story and try to weave that into kind of like a template. One of my favorite characters in the Bible is Jonah. Everybody know Jonah? Know kind of who this guy is? And he is somebody who was called by God to cross a culture and to cross a geographical border to bring the message, to bring a message, in his case, of judgment. And so in a way, he's a bit of a template for me. Some of his own kind of way of walking through this was somewhat similar to my own story. So I'm going to kind of weave that story in with what God has done in our life, with what God is doing in Asia. So that's where I'm going. Now, let's see. My job is not to exegete Jonah, just so you know. And I don't think I'm actually being asked here to kind of give you a significant, a message of an exegetical nature. My challenge really is to kind of tell some of the story. But to give some context in terms of Jonah, I'll just begin here. If you're not familiar with the guy, Jonah was a prophet. And around the 700, B.C. time. And so he was a man of God. And God called him to go to a people in Assyria. And Jonah didn't want to do that. And we know that Jonah ran. He ran away from this call. He had good reason to not want to do it because the people that he was supposed to speak to were people who were enemies, who had oppressed his own people, who had been quite nasty to his own people. And so they were quite famous for their kind of, for the cruelty. And he didn't really want to go to them. And so he ran, and when he ran, He got on a boat. Instead of going to the northeast, he got on a boat that was heading west towards present-day Spain. And as he's on that boat, a storm comes up. And as the storm comes up, he knows, well, once he's woken up, he knows it's all about him. The storm is there because God is not pleased that he's left and he's kind of walked away from the call upon his life. And so in that story, the other guys in the boat, they're freaking out. They all feel like they're going to have to appease whatever God there is that has been offended. And so eventually Jonah convinces them to toss him over into the water. And they do that. The storm ends, and Jonah thinks his story is over. And but what happens is a whale comes along. And if you think that's a fantastic story or somewhat unbelievable, actually, it's not the last time that's happened. If you just go on and do some research on Google, you can see those kind of stories still happen, even off the east coast of North America. But this guy, Jonah, was swallowed up by a whale, and he was in this whale for about 72 hours. And during that time, he had time to think. And he did think. And he kind of realized he was on the wrong direction. So the whale spits him up on the shore. And in time, he goes back to do what God had called him to do and speak to this people in Nineveh. And when he did that, the people responded. They repented. But Jonah wasn't happy. Jonah was very unhappy because he knew that God was gracious. He knew that God was going to forgive him. And so at the end of the story, this little book of 47 verses, which is one of the most beautiful from a literature point of view. It's just a great little story. It in the back, at the end of the story, we see how God encounters Jonah and begins to actually really explore Jonah's heart. So the story of Jonah is not just about a whale. It's not just about Jonah's call. It's also about Jonah and his encounter with God. Well, there's four things I just want to kind of use as my little template for my story and for the story of Jonah and for what God is doing in Asia. So Jonah chapter 1, I'll just read the very verse here. It says in Jonah chapter 1, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it because its wickedness has come up before me. It was God who called, and I think we have a slide, we can go on to the next slide. It was God who called. When we were called, well, this is really what I want to say, is that God calls. God still calls, and he calls people. When we were called to, first of all, to Thailand in 2001, I never expected that I would end up in Asia. Anybody here from Asia? There we go. All right. Good to see you. I never thought I never expected to end up in Asia. I thought it'd be too hot. I thought the food would be too spicy. I thought the languages would be too difficult. I mean, Thailand is tonal, it's five tonal languages, or five tones, so it's a tonal language, very difficult. And so I thought, how will we ever end up there? But we did, and it was just clear that God was calling us to be there. But we began this ministry called Imagine Thailand, and Imagine Thailand was doing work in different parts of the country. It was really focused on linking university students to places of need in the country, linking those who are denied opportunity to those who have opportunity. So that was the vision of Imagine Thailand. And one of the areas that we were focused in on was a border area called the Thai-Burma or the Thai-Myanmar border. Myanmar is also known as Burma. That's this original or historic name, maybe. And so if I use Myanmar, if I use Burma, I'm saying the same thing. So we were working on the Thai-Burma border. And my wife was doing quite a bit of work there. And the Thai-Burma border is quite interesting and quite sad and dramatic. I was just there a few weeks ago, and you could hear the bombing from across the river. And it's a challenging place because it's largely been in civil war since the Second World War. And so because of that, millions of migrants and refugees have come across the border into Thailand looking for safety and a new life. And so we were doing quite a bit of work there. And Thailand is a developing country and is a very, very prosperous, very advanced in many ways, and it's a fabulous place. as you would definitely know. It's a great country. But Burma is, you know, Myanmar, it's a world away. It really is. And so one day, my wife gets this call, and she says, would you be willing to go to Myanmar? And my wife is full of adventure. She said, absolutely, I would go tomorrow. And then she calls me, because she was out that night, and she said, I got this call, and I'm really keen. And I said, not on your life. I had no real interest. I really didn't. I was very, very comfortable in Thailand. We had IKEA. I didn't know if there was anything more I needed in my life. And so I felt very, very comfortable. And so, anyways, we decided that we're going to go there, short story. We said we're going to go there for 48 hours. And if God provides us with schooling, with a visa, and with a place to live in 48 hours, we'll go. And I didn't think he would do that, but he did. And not only that, he provided me with a man in a green shirt. And I just really remember this man very clearly because we were in a hotel breakfast room and we were there for those 48 hours. And I was really fighting it because I really didn't want to go. I was like Jonah. I really did not want to go. I was happy where I was. There was need where I was. There was opportunity to serve where I was. There was really no need for me to go to a country that was completely broken. And this man came up to us and asked us, what are we doing? And we just told him, and he said, you know what? You need to go. And you need to go now. And if you don't go now, don't go at all. This is your time. And I had a very clear sense that God was speaking to me through this man in the green shirt that we were being called. That God was calling us to do something that we had really no good explanation for. We didn't know what we were going to do or how we were going to do it. But we just felt that God was calling for us to cross another border, to cross another culture, to serve in another place. And I say all that because that's what God was asking Jonah to do. And I say that because I believe that God still calls people. God still calls people to cross a culture, to cross a geographical border, to serve in another place. And I know that's not everybody. But I also know that he still calls. It's easy for us to sometimes wonder about that. You know, that Jonah wasn't the only prophet out there. There was another prophet by the name of Amos. And Amos was a contemporary. He was also a prophet, also a man of God. But God called him, Amos, to speak to the people of Israel. And you can read his prophetic word to the people of Israel in a book called Amos. God called Amos to serve his own people, his own nation, but he called Jonah to cross a culture and to cross a geographical boundary. And God still does that. It is possible in our time, especially in Canada, and I love Canada, but it is possible for us to think the needs are just too great here in Canada. And they are great. We know that the situation in Canada is changing dramatically. We know that from a political point of view, from an economic point of view, from many different angles, there's a tremendous need in this country. And I honor those, you, who are serving in this country and are called to Canada. But it's still true that God still calls people to cross a border. God still calls people to cross a culture. And so if you're in that boat, and this, I guess I wanted to kind of begin with this because everything else I have to say about Asia or whatever makes more sense when we just at least affirm the fact that God is still calling. He's still leading people out of the place of their home or their context or their safety to a new place. Are the issues in Canada big? Yes. Is God bringing the world to Canada? Yes. Is there opportunity and need to serve in Canada? Absolutely, yes. But is God still calling people to serve abroad? The answer is yes. God called Amos to serve the people of Israel, but he called Jonah to serve abroad. So if you're in that boat, if you are struggling with a sense of this inner compulsion that I feel like I need to at least give this some attention, then I encourage you to do so. You may have heard, well, why don't you just stay? Why don't you just be useful here? You can be more economically viable. You can be more effective. You're speaking in, and working in your own culture, in your own country, and all that. It's all true. But there are still people, perhaps even in this room, who God is speaking to about crossing a culture, crossing a border to serve in another place. Now, Jonah didn't like that. So he ran. So Jonah chapter 2, the second thing is that, the second little point I want to make here is that it's often the big signs. It's often the big signs that get us moving in the right direction. So if you remember the story, the big sign is the whale. Jonah gets thrown over the boat, and a whale swallows him. The Bible says that God sent the whale. Now, it's interesting because in a way, God being God, you would think that he would go to plan B. I mean, really, was Jonah a really good option? Like, if you were a human resource person in God's call kind of business, would you have called Jonah? I mean, it's not like God didn't know what this guy was made of. He was a man of God, yes, but he certainly knew the kind of person he was. I'm sure he was pretty certain he knew what Jonah was going to do. Would he not have, this would have been God's chance to kind of cut and run, to let Jonah end up in the bottom of the ocean and find somebody else. There was Amos, Isaiah was around, there's different people that, Micah, there's other guys he could have called that would have done a better job than Jonah. But God is so committed to the people he calls, as imperfect as they are. Ever felt imperfect? Ever felt like you're not really the best qualified for a job? Ever felt that? I bet you have. Jonah felt that. Maybe he knew it. But God didn't have a plan B. His plan A was the only plan he had, and that was Jonah. And so he sent this whale. And again, I take the whale as a literal fact, largely because it just makes sense, and because Jonah was a historical figure, and because it still happens, believe it or not. But beyond being a literal fact, Jonah's story of being swallowed up by the whale, well, it's also kind of like a lesson. It's how God does stuff sometimes, not always, but often. You may have said this one time in your life, and maybe you're hoping to say this at one time, but there are certain points in our life where it seems like something is just so clear, I just got to do it, right? Maybe it's a decision to buy a house, and it just the deal is so clear, or the opportunity is so clear, or there's a job that's available to you, and it just seems so obvious, I just got to do this. You know, when we went to Myanmar for those 48 hours, and God gave us all the things that we needed in those 48 hours, which at the time seemed impossible, we just kind of said, well, I guess that's where we're going. It wasn't like we just, you know, it just became clear. It was like this big sign, we're going to figure it out. Don't know what we're going to do, but we know, at least we know the big thing. We know that this is where we need to go. And I've heard that from many people. There's, you know, there's a certain point, sometimes, it doesn't happen all the time. I know this. I know there's times when you wish you had a big sign somewhere telling you what to do. But I know lots of people said this to me. It was just so clear. I just had to do it. It was like a duh moment where you say, duh, I'm going to do this, right? You know, why wouldn't I? It's just so obvious. This is just the most realistic thing to do. So when I think about Asia, And I want to admit that I am a guest in Asia. As you can tell, I'm not Asian in any way, but I love that part of the world. But I came to love it. I didn't love it when I first went there. But Asia, there are a lot of big signs. The whale in Jonah's life was what he needed to get in the right direction. It's what set him on the right course. That's really all the whale, well, it was salvation as well. It saved his life, but it got him on the right track. That's what the whale is all about. The whale is all about direction. And in Asia, there's lots of big signs, lots of big whales to give us the direction that we need as a people of God as to where we should be focusing our attention. If you think about Asia as a place to serve, as a place that is on the heart of God, there's a lot of big signs. There's a lot of whales. Here are some numbers, and hopefully I won't, you know, I don't want to say boy, but sometimes numbers can be numbing. But here's some numbers. In the area that we serve in, we have about 100 global workers from all across Canada who are serving in Asia, and we serve a population of about 4.1 billion people. That means we have about one global worker for every 40 million people. That would be like one person to serve in all of Canada. 60% of the world's population is in Asia. 78% of the world's non-Christian population lives in Asia. Of the other major religions, and I'm not speaking poorly about them, but I'm just saying these are faith groups that would have less access to the story of Jesus. 99% of all Buddhists in our world live in Asia. 99% of all Hindus in our world live in Asia. 62% of all Muslims in our world live in Asia. It is the most religiously diverse part of our world. If you want to describe Asia, you have to always use the ST at the end of your descriptor. It's the most, it's the biggest, it's the largest, it's the densest. I mean, the cities there are unbelievable. If you think about the Hong Kong, Sichuan kind of triangle, these three cities, that's 80 million people in one urban area. 80 million people in one urban area alone. The numbers are staggering. 70%, and this is probably the most disturbing thing, 70% of all unreached people groups, and by unreached people groups, we mean people who would have a population of less than 2% in that people group who would be evangelical Christians. So what you're trying to say by that term, unreached people group, is that most people in that people group don't have access to either knowing, shaking the hand of, or hearing the gospel through a person in their own community. Because in that community, 98% of the people have no access to the gospel. 70% of all unreached people groups are in our area. 70%. So those are all big signs. They're all big whales saying that if we as a people of God, the Church of God, are concerned about the Great Commission and are concerned about somehow allowing people to at least hear what the gospel is, then we would focus our attention on this part of the world we call Asia. You would think that would be our priority. But in fact, when you think of all Christian organizations around the world, only 3.3% of our global workers focus in on Asia. 70% is the need, 3.3% is what the response has been up to date. What that's saying is, by and large, most of our missionary or global work activity is focused on people who already have access to a clear presentation of the gospel. So if you want to talk about big signs, if you want to talk about big fish that would set us as the people of God, I'm not just talking about this church, but the people of God universally on a priority it would, these are the big signs, and there's lots more. I mean, here's a couple other things just to think about. Talking with one of my colleagues in Pakistan this morning, and they're working on a project. There's over 3 million people in Pakistan who are human slaves in 2023. This past week, I was talking with a lady from India, and she works with the ministry there. It is not uncommon, it is actually common for 10-year-old girls of the lowest caste to be sold by family members into temple prostitution. 10 years old. This happens today. Today. So if we need a big sign, if we need a big whale to kind of get the church in the direction of really focusing their attention on the least reached in Asia, there's lots of big whales out there. There's lots of things to get us in the right direction. But in fact, we're not. There's good news, by the way. There is good news. But it's a bit discouraging, actually. Because in a way, we as a church are a little bit like Jonah. We're running away from where the need is. Now, there's reasons for that. It's tough. Certainly, the persecution in Asia, not all countries, but it's the most severe, the most violent, and the most consequential of any place in the world, virtually, almost. The good news is, within our own fellowship of churches, our numbers are more like 35 to 40% of our global workers are working with least reached. It's 10 times the global average. So I'm very happy about that. And there's other good news. So that's my third point. What is my third point? Does anybody know? Because I can't remember. Okay. I said it's a big sign that gets moving in the right direction. Here it is. I do need these once in a while just to keep me on target. The good thing about this is that when God calls, he always goes ahead of us. He does. He's already there. He's just actually asking us to be involved. He's just asking us to come along, maybe for the ride. I mean, God was already engaged with Nineveh. God was already working in Nineveh. He just wanted Jonah to come along for a reason. Chapter 4 shows. But he, I think God could have done it without Jonah, but he wants Jonah to participate. And when it comes to Asia, there's lots of big signs of why we should be engaged there. But he's asking it for us to come along. So in chapter 3, what we see is that Jonah goes, and he speaks this word. This is a great sermon, Jeff. I think you should preach it sometime. I think it'd be awesome. He goes this, 40 more days and Nineveh will be overthrown. That was his message. Now, maybe there was more, but I don't think actually it's a winner. I think it's, 40 more days and you will be overthrown. And somehow that resonated and people responded and people repented and the whole nation put on sackcloth representative of repentance and turned around. I don't think it was because of Jonah's great communication skills. I don't think it was because Jonah was actually that amazing of a speaker that his words were particularly contextually happy. I just think God was ahead of him and he prepared him and he allowed Jonah to participate in what really was a great repentance. God has prepared a way. So if you look at Asia, here are some examples of what God is doing. Despite what I've just said about the challenges, the numbers that kind of overwhelm us, and all those things, this great stuff happening in Asia. And because you're a part of that, you should be thankful that you actually have a part in this. But I told you that every year 40 million people are added to Asia. Huge growth rate, but the church is growing faster. In fact, it's the only region of the world where the church is growing at a rate faster than the general population by about another 50%. The growth of the church in Asia is actually, it's amazing, and it's an untold story, but it's growing. And the growing of Pentecostal churches, churches who are open to the Holy Spirit, is absolutely phenomenal. So there's enormous growth. Well, here are some stories that I believe because you're part of this church, you're a part of. here's some things that God is doing. There's a story of Don, and I won't give you all people's full names, but Don was somebody who served in Thailand for many years, and once he was invited to go to Bangladesh, and he spoke twice, two small crowds. In one crowd, there was a young boy who was in a tree, like Zacchaeus. He was in a tree listening to what Don had to say, and this man, Philip, came to faith. Philip grew up. Philip became a very successful businessman, and he also became a very successful church planner. Did both. He now leads what we call the Pentecostal Assemblies of Bangladesh. It's the largest church movement in Bangladesh. They have over 3,500 churches across Bangladesh. It's an unbelievable story that in a really predominantly and strong militant Buddhist nation or a Muslim nation, it's really quite remarkable what God has done there. God went ahead of Don to prepare and had this young man ready for what God wanted to do. I think of Vanuatu. I don't know if you've ever known of Vanuatu, but it's far in the South Pacific. But we had this couple, Dave and Julie, who from Edmonton. They served here in Western Ontario as well, not Eastern Ontario, but in Ontario. And they just finished up in a church. And they didn't know what to do. And somebody called them up and said, "Hey, you want to come to Vanuatu?" And Dave says, "I don't have a clue where Vanuatu is. It's a long ways away." But he says, "Okay, I'll come down." His wife says, his wife already knew, you know, that's usually how it works, right? Usually we're catching up, but she knew, but he said, "Okay, I'll check it out." And he goes down there, and he just, please, this is where God has called me to. And then he meets this woman, and she says, "You know, I've been praying for a Canadian Pentecostal to serve here for years, because there's actually a heritage of a former Canadian Pentecostal from Winnipeg who served there decades ago. But God had prepared the path for Dave and Julie to come there. And by coming there, they have seen a church flourish and grow." Well, I think about Pakistan. A young man from Calgary, his name is Kyle. And he's only been there for like less than a year and a half. When he got to Pakistan, they had those big floods last year, and much of the country was underwater. And so with the group of churches that he was networked with, local national churches, they were able to secure about $2 million U.S. in funding to help provide, you know, tents and food and lots of different things. It was one of the first times there was such a large response from the church in Pakistan. And not only were they able to help and serve and care, they also saw 27 churches planted out of this initiative. God went ahead of Kyle to prepare a way. He would never have known what was ahead of him, but God prepared a place for him. I think about another couple that we have in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. I won't give you their names because, you know, Vietnam is a communist country. And it's not, there's a lot of guys in prison right now, a lot of men and women in prison right now because they love the Lord and they serve him. But they go into this country believing that God has given them a purpose, learn the language, and begin to be connected with people who are involved in university ministry. Well, the end result of that has been that they've been able to build a ministry center, all funded within the country, not from Canada. They built a $300,000 building, six stories, a ministry center in the center of a campus that serves 300,000 university students in a communist country, fully funded, fully legal, fully able to minister to students in Ho Chi Minh City. God went ahead of them. I think of Ian and Tiffany, a couple that Jeff and Ainsley have been to visit with in Phnom Penh. Ian, he went to, his role in Cambodia was to teach in a Bible school. And you know what? That was a lousy fit for him. He's a good teacher, but it's not for Ian, let me tell you. And every day as he drove past to go to the Bible school, he saw all these students, university students, that his heart just broke for them. And he said, "I got to do something." And so he opened up the Global Student Center, and that student center now serves about 600 students every week. They've built a brand new building, to serve students, to become a dormitory, to become a ministry center for students. It's just really quite remarkable what God has done through his life, because God prepared a way. Well, I do want to finish before noon tomorrow. So let me just bring one last, because actually the last point to me, for me, has always been really the important one, because it's about the worm. If you remember the story of Jonah, there's the whale, which gets a lot of attention, but it's a worm who really should get more attention, because the worm was the one who brought revelation to Jonah's heart. Jonah ultimately got sent in the right direction. He ultimately obeyed. He did what God told him to do. Next slide, please. But his heart wasn't in it. So what happens in the last chapter is that Jonah waits to see what kind of destruction might be rained upon the city of Nineveh, because he really, while he did what God told him to do, he really wanted them to be judged. He didn't love this people. He didn't go there because he wanted to check out Assyrian food. He didn't go there because he was looking for adventure. He didn't go there because he actually even cared about the people. He only did it because it was the right thing to do, and God saved his life. And I can tell you that I've been in that same place, and maybe you have too. I can obey God. I can do stuff because I know that's my parents taught me how to obey. You know, I can do that, but it doesn't mean my heart has changed. And so when God, you know, God speaks to Jonah through this worm in a way, because first of all, Jonah's on the side of the hill. He's watching what's going to happen to Nineveh. Nothing happens. He's really hot. God sends a plant to grow up. It brings shade to Jonah. Jonah is happy. In the whole 47 verses of Jonah, this is the only time he is happy. And shortly thereafter, God sends a worm, and the worm takes away Jonah's comfort, takes away the shade, takes away the thing that really motivates Jonah and motivates many of us. It's our own self-security. It's our own sense of comfort. We live for that. I do too. I like hot showers. You know, we all love that stuff, but that's the stuff that really put Jonah over the edge. He was so angry, and God asks him, do you have a right to be angry? And Jonah says, I do. I do. I think he felt God really betrayed him. And God says to him, you're concerned about your comfort. I'm concerned about this 120,000 people who don't even know their left hand from their right, and their animals. I think that's a really interesting addition. God cares about people. 4.1 billion people in Asia, God cares about these people. And so when we participate, when we give, when we pray, when we go, whether it's short or long, we are participating. We're participating in the heart of God. God can do it without us, but he's chosen not to. He needs us. He wants us to invest. In a sense, plant that tulip bulb in the ground to see fruit and a blossom down the road. He's calling us to invest. He's calling us to respond, to be a part of what he's doing in our world. Amen.